appendicitis, rookie drivers, and a Red Bull 1-2. This week I'm chatting all about the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. So get ready, because you've been summoned to the steward's office. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the steward's office. I'm Sarah, and this week we headed out to the Jeddah Corniche Circuit for the second round in the F1 World Championship. It was a back-to-back race, the first doubleheader of the season is done and over with, and there were some interesting things that happened, mainly off track. So you know what, let's just dive right into it all and get into what happened. Now first of all, I do want to start off by saying happy International Women's Day, even though it is a little bit belated. It is so encouraging and just so beautiful to see so many women, not just interested in Formula One, but interested in so many different motorsport series. It's amazing to watch so many female content creators in the space right now. TikTok, Instagram, podcasting, on X, on Threads, just women being fans of the sport and unapologetically being fans of the sport. It's really, really beautiful to watch. I am so glad to be a part of that female community where so many women are lifting each other up, supporting each other, and really just wishing the best for each other. And yes, we still do have a way to go in terms of diversity and inclusion, seeing more women in motorsport in all different careers, and seeing women at the top level of motorsport. We are getting there. Small steps are being taken. We're seeing people take women in the sport way more seriously, and we will eventually get there. I really, really do believe that. I am so proud to be a woman in this community making content, even though it is a hobby right now. I thoroughly enjoy it, so thank you guys so much for all the support. And that leads into one of the best things I think happened away from the Formula One track, and that is the fact that F1 Academy kicked off its second season out in Jeddah this week. Now, I covered F1 Academy a couple of weeks ago, my feeder series episode, but if you didn't know, F1 Academy is an all-female series that is headed by Susie Wolf. 5 teams, 15 drivers, 10 or 11 of those drivers are supported by a Formula One team. Their liveries are running on the F1 Academy cars. The cars they're running are F4 cars to help them make that step up into F3 and then F2 and hopefully F1. And for the first time, every single race in the F1 Academy calendar is a support race for Formula One. So last year, I think it was only COTA, so the USGP, that F1 Academy was a support race for. This year, just like F3, just like F2, F1 Academy will not be running unless it is a support race for Formula One, which means a lot more visibility for them. And then to add on to that, Sky F1 will be broadcasting every single round of F1 Academy. And I'm pretty sure it's also being shown on YouTube as well. Really, really exciting stuff. A huge, huge step forward for women in motorsport, getting them the visibility, getting people interested and invested in seeing women in motorsport. I watched quali, I watched both races, and it was just phenomenal. Honestly, amazing racing to watch there. So if you haven't had the chance, catch up on YouTube and make sure you watch their next race. Really, really enjoyed it. We also had F2 running again this weekend, and as per usual, those races always deliver. So I would just recommend in general, get into the feeder series, guys, if you're not watching already. There is amazing racing being done there, and right now it's a lot more interesting than the racing that's going on in Formula One, just because it's a lot closer. Heading into the news we had off track this weekend, we had a couple of pieces come out, actually, not a whole load. Kicking off with everything going on with Red Bull, like I mentioned last episode, not everything is fully resolved and wrapped up there. So we currently have things going on with Helmut Marko and Jos Verstappen, or they were going on during this race week. Jos Verstappen, the father of the world champion Max Verstappen, had made some comments basically alluding to the fact that if Christian Horner carried on in his role, it wasn't going to be very good for Red Bull. Probably not what Red Bull want the father of their champion to say. And then we also had some stuff going on with Helmut Marko, and apparently he got told by Red Bull not to go into the media and talk to them. If you know anything about Helmut Marko, you know that this is a man that does tend to go to the media and do a lot of sound bites and sound clips that end up as F1 headlines. He's just that kind of guy. We had rumors basically that he was going to be suspended by Red Bull. He had gone to Sky Germany, I think, and said that he was meeting with the head of Red Bull and that, yeah, he might not be in Australia. Off the back of that, Max Verstappen then made a comment where he essentially said that it wouldn't work out very well for him in Red Bull if Helmut Marko wasn't there. So I think it was really, really clear to see from those comments that Max Verstappen's sort of loyalty lies more with Helmut Marko in that team, more so than Christian Horner, maybe. That's not surprising, though. I feel like it is a fairly well-known fact that Max Verstappen does tend to have more loyalty towards Helmut Marko. I think he was the guy that really got him into F1 and everything. That's what happened there. But then on the Saturday, which was race day, Helmut Marko said he had had that meeting with the head Red Bull and everything was fine. Now, the rumour was he was going to be suspended because he had been leaking things to the press and Red Bull weren't happy about it. And whilst we do talk about suspensions, probably the biggest thing that has happened with the situation going on with Red Bull right now is the fact that reportedly the woman that had made the allegations against Christian Horner has been suspended from Red Bull on full pay. Now, I say this is reported. We don't know for certain. I don't think Red Bull have actually commented on anything. They're kind of just saying, look, it's an internal matter and that's it. But this, I think, once again highlights the lack of transparency we've had around this entire case and situation with Red Bull. And that is why it's had so much media interest. Why so many fans have been talking about it. It's just because there's not been any transparency from Red Bull really on the situation. And that's not saying that they have to divulge all of the information and everything that went on in the case at all, because nope, I would not expect that. However, we have seen situations similar in the media where a team or a company or a business can't divulge everything, but there is more transparency there. So I think that's really what is causing the rumour mill to keep going. I don't agree with the rumours that are being spread and I don't necessarily think we should speculate, but the lack of transparency means that a lot of the media and fans are speculating about what's going on. So yeah, I feel like we are once again going to be going into another week where we are still wondering what happened and what is going on, and Red Bull really just wanting to keep everything locked tight away, even though there are so many questions still hanging over their heads right now. Some of the biggest news this weekend actually comes from Ferrari. Now, Carlos Sainz ended up missing his media duties on Wednesday because he wasn't feeling well. He did turn up to track on Thursday to do free practice one, free practice two, and I can't lie, he did not look too great. Friday came around for FP3 and qualifying, and that morning the news broke that he was in hospital with appendicitis undergoing surgery. So Ferrari ended up calling up their reserve driver. Now they do have three reserve drivers: Robert Schwartzman, who's been part of the FDA for a very long time now, Antonio Giovinazzi, who is a part of their Le Mans winning team last year and is still part of the Ferrari family and driving in WEC again this year, and then 18-year-old Ollie Bearman, who is part of the FDA, is in F2 in his second season racing for Prema, and a really young and up-and-coming talent. And since F2 we're going to be running in Saudi, I don't think Ferrari opted to bring any of their other reserve drivers, and so Ollie Bearman was taking the seat at Ferrari to replace Carlos Sainz. 18 years old and Ollie Bearman was taking that seat. It made him the youngest driver that Ferrari has ever had. He is the first British driver that Ferrari has run in a great number of years. He's the youngest ever British driver on the Formula One grid, the youngest driver on the current Formula One grid. But yes, he was going to be taking over Carlos Sainz's seat, and I cannot imagine the excitement but also the nerves he must have been feeling when he had that phone call on Friday morning. And we will get into how he did this weekend, because we are now going to have a chat about the race weekend itself. And practices were all pretty straightforward. Now, I'm going to put it out there, guys. The Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, the Jeddah Corniche circuit, always puts me on edge a little bit. We've never had a fully clean race there. We've never had a race without a safety car, and the incidents that we have seen at Saudi have been pretty bad. It is a extremely high speed track, which can be exciting to watch, but it's a street circuit. The walls are super close. The most corners that we have on any track on the F1 calendar were 27 turns. It is dangerous. It can be dangerous if you lose your car, if you're not paying attention properly. It's one of those tracks where you just feel on edge if you're watching an onboard with a driver, if they're following a driver through a lap. It does feel like they're really just on the edge with their car. So it is one of those race weekends I probably feel the most nervous going into. But practice, everyone seemed to do okay. FP3, however, was the only free practice session that we ended up seeing an incident in. Thankfully, the other two practice sessions were fine. Zhou Guanyu ended up spinning and hitting a barrier, and that ended up causing a red flag to come out with 20 minutes left of the session, and then the green flag got waved again with 5 minutes left. Thankfully, Zhou Guanyu was absolutely fine though. However, because this crash was in FP3 and there was a fair bit of damage to the car, the mechanics at Kickside were just unable to get the car ready for him to go out in qualifying, so he did end up in P20. The stewards did end up giving him the permission to drive, even though he hadn't been in qualifying. But quali, once again, absolute nightmare for both Alpines, who did get kicked out. Esteban Ocon said he was disappointed because they were expecting more. I know last race he was saying that Saudi was hopefully a track that would suit them better, but it just didn't. Logan Sargeant saw another Q1 elimination, and so did Valtteri Bottas. So that was both Kicksilvers out, both Alpines, and then, yeah, Logan Sargeant in the Williams. Q2, Nico Hülkenberg had an engine issue. He ended up stopping very, very early in the session. That brought the red flag out and he didn't set a time at all. Gutting for Nico Hülkenberg though, because he is a driver that does very, very good in qualifying. We've seen him get into Q3 last year as well with the Haas cars. It would have been interesting to see what he would have been able to do out in Saudi. And then in Q3, we had Max Verstappen take pole position, no surprise there, followed by Charles Leclerc in P2. I mean, I think the season's going to be a toss of either Charles or Max being on pole position, but both of them will end up being on the front row. And then Sergio Perez took a P3. Saturday was race day and we kicked off with drama before the lights even went out. Yuki Tsunoda was getting investigated for an unsafe release pre-race and nearly crashed into Lando Norris. Formation lap, Pierre Gasly seemed to have issues with what sounded like his gearbox as he was going around. The car just did not sound healthy. It was just making this weird stop-start noise as he was making his way to the grid. So, I mean, everything kicking off before we even got into the race. Pierre Gasly did end up retiring on the first lap. His race engineer came onto the radio and just said, look, you're gonna have to retire the car. And his Saudi Arabian Grand Prix was very, very short-lived. He got back into the pits and, yeah, Alpine had to retire the car. We had George complaining that Lando had done a jump start before the lights had gone out. That got investigated, nothing came of it. But yes, can you see there was just a lot going on straight away. By lap 7, we had a safety car. Lance Stroll ended up having a brush with the walls again. That broke his suspension and he went into a barrier. Safety car came out so they could recover that car, sort out the barrier, and then racing continued. And after that point, I can't lie, it was a very, very quiet and at times slightly boring race. Most of the drivers ended up going into the pits during that safety car, put on the hard tires, ready to run the rest of the race. 4 drivers ended up not pitting during that safety car, and they were Norris, Hamilton, Hülkenberg and Zhou. And I'm pretty sure it was because all 4 of those drivers were way too close to their teammates to double stack them. We had a couple of time penalties in this race, I think 3 in total. Sergio Perez got a 5-second time penalty for an unsafe release when Fernando Alonso was going past. Kevin Magnussen took 2 10-second time penalties. His first one was for causing a collision with Alex Albon, and his second one was for leaving the track and gaining an advantage against Yuki Tsunoda. Last year, both those penalties would have gotten him 5 seconds each, but they had revised the rules. I think they're trying to clamp down on it a little bit more and making sure that drivers really understand that there is a punishment if they do these things. I think the FIA potentially thought 5 seconds was a little too lenient. So yes, it's now 10 seconds if you cause collision and 10 seconds if you leave the track, gain an advantage and don't give that place back. Max Verstappen ended up winning the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix to absolutely no one's surprise, let's be honest. Sergio Perez took P2 and Charles Leclerc took P3. So the same teams on the podium. Obviously, Carlos Sainz not on there because he wasn't racing, but Charles Leclerc up there representing Ferrari. Finishing out the points, Oscar Piastri, Fernando Alonso, George Russell, Ollie Bearman, Lando Norris, Lewis Hamilton, and Nico Hülkenberg. Now look, normally when I go through the teams, I go in the current order of the World Constructors Championship. But this time, I really want to start with Ferrari because I really want to talk about Ollie Bearman. Like I mentioned, this is an 18-year-old driver from Britain in his second season of F2, and he is a phenomenal driver. There has been so much excitement and chatter surrounding him. He is a much-loved part of Prema, his F2 team, and it was his F3 team as well. A much-loved part of the FDA, and has driven for Haas in FP1 sessions, and yes, is there is driver as well as Ferrari's reserve driver. This 18-year-old was a couple of hundredths off out-qualifying Lewis Hamilton in Q2. That was how well he did. He ended up qualifying the Ferrari in P11, and I think for your debut race in a car that is way more powerful because it's a F1 car anyway, but a Ferrari car, which is a car that is currently the second fastest on the F1 grid, it's going to be way more powerful compared to the Haas that you were driving in FP1s last year. So to get that car into P11, I think is just absolutely brilliant. Honestly, I am so impressed. Part of the reason I absolutely adored watching Ollie Bearman race was simply because of his dad's reactions in the Ferrari garage. I am absolutely chuffed that his dad did get to be there to watch his son's F1 racing debut, because I can't imagine as a parent feeling gutted that you missed that out. So really glad that he was out in Jeddah with Ollie. But you could see the absolute stress on this man's face when in qualifying Ollie was clipping the wall during the race as well. You could see the stress on his face at times, and I think it kind of just reminds you, we have a lot of drivers on the grid this year. We don't have any rookies at all, right? But we have a lot of drivers on the grid that are very seasoned. They've been in F1 a very long time. A lot of them, majority of them, were there before I started watching, so I didn't really get to watch them in their rookie years when they were getting their first podiums and their first wins and things like that. And the thing is, I think all of the F1 drivers appreciate every race they get to do, all the points they get to take away, the podiums, the wins. But there's something so special about watching a driver get into an F1 car for the first time, and not just them being excited, not just them fulfilling a childhood dream, but also seeing how excited their family is to see all the hard work that not just the driver has put in, but the family, the time, the effort, the energy, the support that the family give that driver. And you can see on their face just how much it means to people like Ollie Bearman's dad and how emotional they can get over that. And rightfully so. It is a massive thing. There are 20 drivers that get into F1, and to do that, even as a reserve driver for Ferrari, to make your racing debut with Ferrari, just amazing. Gives me goosebumps. Goosebumps and a little bit emotional, I can't lie, but it's just, yeah, it's a childhood dream for those rookie drivers that get to go into the car, and I can't imagine as a parent how that must feel as well. But he did have an absolutely amazing race, got points on his debut, and it wasn't just P10. This guy was in P7. He ended up beating out Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton, two very good seasoned British drivers. One of them's a seven-time world champion, so it was absolutely phenomenal from him. I'm so glad and just so happy for him. And I can't lie, I've told multiple people now, and I said this before this race weekend, Ollie Bearman's going to be on the grid in 2025. I have no doubt about it. There will be a Haas seat waiting for him in 2025, and this has definitely sealed the deal. He is running a good couple of FP sessions with Haas. He's probably going to end up running some with Ferrari as well. And yeah, I just think Haas are going to be looking to turn over their drivers, at least one of them, especially with a new team principal in place now. So yes, I am 100% expecting Oliver Bearman on the grid in 2025, because also, for Ferrari and the FDA, you don't bring him into Haas, he will start looking for a seat on the F1 grid, rightfully so, because he's going to want to get into Formula 1, he can't wait forever. And if you don't put him in a seat, in Hearts, then another team are going to look at taking him. So yes, I will not be surprised at all if we hear about Ollie Bearman being signed to Haas by the end of this year. Looking at our regular Ferrari driver though, Charles Leclerc, I actually did not hear much about him during this race. He qualified in P2, ended up taking P3. I think the Red Bull speed and Sergio Perez was just a little bit too much this race, but it was really quiet. He did end up with a bit of a gap from Sergio Perez. I was really, really hoping that he would be able to close that gap with Sergio, because Sergio had that 5-second time penalty, but it was not meant to be. I think there was about a 10, maybe 11 second gap between him and Sergio Perez, so Sergio ended up keeping P2. Charles got P3. I don't think this was an awful race for Ferrari, but I just don't know whether this was not suited to their car. As of right now, I would say that Ferrari are definitely solidifying themselves as the second best car on the grid. They can't catch up with Red Bull, but it looks like McLaren, Mercedes, Aston Martin, they're struggling to keep up with Ferrari. So there is that delta in time difference on both sides for Ferrari that's cushioning them quite nicely in P2. Obviously, that is not where they are aiming though. They want to catch up with Red Bull. So I'm going to be very, very interested to see what upgrades they bring over the next couple of races, over the rest of the season, and how that changes what this picture looks like for them. We saw with Aston Martin last year, the upgrades they brought did end up just pushing them further back in the pack as other teams really nailed their upgrades and they moved ahead. Ferrari, we will wait and see. It's just the development race everyone talks about, right? How fast can you bring your upgrades and how good will they be? Because you could bring a raft load of upgrades, but if it's only giving you tiny bits of speed and tiny bits of race pace compared to other teams that might not bring as many upgrades but are making massive gains, then it seems a little pointless. I'm really hoping that when they do opt to bring upgrades, it is pushing them closer to Red Bull. In Bahrain, there was a much bigger gap between Sergio and Max, so it looked like Ferrari might be able to slowly try and contend with him. Sergio did end up closing that gap when we went out to Saudi though, so we'll wait and see what happens there. But we will now go back to our driver standings. Red Bull were once again in first place. You know, we've got Max with P1, Sergio with P2. Unlike last week though, they didn't take the max amount of points. Charles Leclerc did take fastest lap. And I am sure Red Bull are going to really, really feel that one missing point at this point in the season. At the moment, they're sitting happy with 87 points. Ferrari are in P2 with 49. I don't know what else there is to say about Red Bull. I didn't say all of last season and last week, right? It's been absolutely flawless from them. This was a team that double stacked their cars during that safety car period. Max and Sergio were in 1-2 before the safety car came out, and yep, double stacked with no problem. Bar obviously the unsafe release, but we won't talk about that right now. Max breezing through no problem. Sergio Perez right behind him. Like I mentioned, that gap between the teammates in terms of time did get smaller. That's got to be a welcome sight for Sergio Perez, especially because he's fighting to keep his seat in Red Bull, and if not in Red Bull, to keep his seat in Formula One. So to see that gap from 22 seconds out in Bahrain go to about 7 or 8 in Saudi is a very, very good sign. So yeah, I think that's really the long and short of it with Red Bull right now. Going into P3 in the Constructors is McLaren, and they have leapfrogged Mercedes for P3. Really, really interesting race for them. They were struggling with straight line speed this entire weekend. They left Lando Norris out during the safety car, didn't box him. I would have been really curious to see where he would have ended up had he have boxed the same time as Oscar. Oscar Piastri though did have some trouble with Lewis Hamilton during this race. Lewis was ahead of him after the safety cars and some overtaking was done, but Oscar for the life of him could not get past Lewis Hamilton when he was on newer tyres and the hard compound, while Lewis was on older tyres, the medium compounds, which were degrading much more compared to the hard tyre. And I think that was one between the great defending that Lewis Hamilton was doing against Oscar Piastri, but it was also because straight line speed of the McLaren was not great, and that is something that they've mentioned has not been brilliant for them this season. It is something they're going to want to try and figure out. Even when it comes to like their DRS, it's just not as efficient as other teams on the grid. And yeah, when your straight line speed isn't great anyway, DRS is only going to help so much. And we saw that a lot actually with Mercedes last year. They really, really struggled with their straight line speed. This year, it just seems to have passed on to McLaren, but he did eventually get past Lewis Hamilton. It wasn't going to make a huge amount of difference anyway, because Lewis was going to have to pit. But I think what it did do is ruin the race that Oscar could have potentially had with Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. Lando Norris, like I mentioned, yes, would have been so curious what would have happened had he pitted the same time around Oscar, but I think the double stacking was not something McLaren wanted to take the risk with. They did leave him out there for quite a while, but I think he managed his tyres very, very well and still ended up in the points even after that later pit stop. Mercedes, I think, had a really similar tale to McLaren. They left one driver out in George Russell, and then Lewis Hamilton had to just carry on with the medium tyres. George had a fairly quiet session, didn't hear a whole load from him, but he just didn't seem to be able to make a lot of progress, couldn't really catch up with Fernando Alonso and sort of make the pass against him. Mercedes in general, once again, this is a circuit they seem to be struggling with, and much like 2022, we're in a place for them again where they are having to split setups between their two drivers. We saw this when the new regulations had come in 22, right? And the car wasn't great, and they knew that very, very early on. So they were giving Lewis one setup, George another setup, and hoping to figure out which one would be better and learn as much as they can. 2023 was a little bit better for that. They had sort of figured out kind of where the car needed to be in the setup window, especially after they had that big upgrade package come in. We've come into 2024, and yes, the concept of the car is fairly new to them, so they are on a learning curve, but we are also back in a place where they are having to split their strategy again, and that's not great. There are a couple of cars and a couple of teams on the grid right now that are having a new concept in their car, but I'm not hearing about them having to split setup as drastically as Mercedes are doing. It is slightly concerning. I do think this is something that's just going to carry on throughout the year. It's what we saw in 2022. I can't figure out why, but Mercedes just can't seem to understand their cars at the moment. Since these new regulations came in, they designed a car, but they can't seem to fully grasp why it's doing what it's doing, which leads me to believe that what it's doing in the simulator and what it's doing in the wind tunnel isn't always adding up to what's going on track, and that's what they're trying to decipher and figure out. So I feel like this is going to be another season of a lot of problem solving for Mercedes. We will wait and see what happens. I mean, I think the worrying thing is for them. You listen to Charles and Carlos talk about the Ferrari and they're like, yep, they're a lot more comfortable with it. It's doing what they want it to do. It's more predictable. And that they kind of now know where that development direction is. And that is what they're kind of focusing on at this point. With Mercedes, it feels like they can't focus on a development direction because they don't know what's going on with the car. Lewis Hamilton, yes, had a bit of battling and defending to do against Oscar Piastri. He did a phenomenal job at that until, yeah, there was just no way he was going to hold Oscar back anymore. And then finished in P9 behind Lando Norris. So I think even though he had that late pit stop, still did very well to stay in the point. Aston Martin up next in P5 in the constructors, and they've got 13 points in total. It hasn't been horrible for them, but it's not been great. Lance Stroll having that DNF on lap 7 very, very early on in the race probably did cost them a couple of points, because the Aston Martin didn't look horrible on this circuit. I know that Fernando Alonso was complaining on the radio that, yeah, the car didn't feel as fast as the McLaren, but I think we, or at least I kind of knew, it probably wasn't going to be matching up to the McLaren at this circuit and probably throughout the season unless we see some really good upgrades on that car. But I think there was a good chance that Lance Stroll could have finished in the points had it not been for that incident. I am very interested to see how Lance Stroll's entire season goes. It wasn't the best season for him in 2023. He was very frustrated at times, couldn't really monopolize when the car was doing well, couldn't really eke the most out of the car when it wasn't doing so well compared to Fernando Alonso. We saw the frustration. I'm very curious how this season goes for him now. And that if it doesn't go well, what he opts to do, if he opts to carry on racing or to step away for a bit and to step away from Formula One, maybe to try another series, maybe to go into business with his dad, who knows. But his season is one I'm really, really interested in watching. In number six is Haas. I'm not entirely sure how they've ended up in P6. Well, I am sure it's because Nico Hülkenberg did manage to score a point for the team. Now, barring Kevin Magnussen's 20-second penalty, in total, two 10-second penalties, Haas did not do horribly this race. Their car is looking like it's becoming a better race car, can't lie. It is looking way, way better on a race day compared to last year. It's not just looking like a quality car anymore. Nico, I think, did a really good job once again for a guy that didn't actually pit with everyone else during the safety car. Still managed to get into the points. Kevin Magnussen did some amazing moves, some amazing overtakes, held back the pack so Nico Hülkenberg could have that gap to pit and still come out within the points. I think Kevin had a good race. I mean, barring the incident with Alex Albon and then overtaking Yuki Tsunoda off track. But it is a welcome point for Haas because after that, in sixth place, all the other teams do not have a point yet. And we know when we get to the bottom half of the table, every single point counts. So that is definitely going to be a welcome point for Haas, and we will see how the rest of the races go for them. Coming in seventh is Williams. No points for them on the board yet. Not the start to the season they were hoping for. Not the start to the season I was expecting from them necessarily. I thought they would have had one or two points on there by now. Fairly quiet-ish race for Alex Albon and definitely for Logan Sargeant, who just isn't really doing as well as what he probably would want to do right now and what I was hoping for him to do. He's not managed to get a Q1 for the second week in a row now in the 2024 season, and that performance needs to be stepped up in order for him to keep that seat. But it was just a quiet race from them. I would say the same for Kick Sauber as well. This wasn't a brilliant race for them. It was fairly quiet. Zhou Guan Yu did a very, very good job, at least at the start, where he made up a lot of places from P20. But he had an awful, awful pit stop, and like Valtteri Bottas last week with the wheel nut, I mean, I don't think it was the same issue, but pit stops are something that the team are going to have to look at, because 2 weeks in a row for the pit stops to be messing up like that is not great. It is costing your drivers at this point. And once again, at the back of the field, even if you aren't gaining points, where you finish in a Grand Prix really does affect where your rankings are in the Constructors' Championship. So getting those places really, really matters. So messing up pit stops is really not an option. Ninth in the Constructors is RB. Tsunoda was not having a bad race. Had a very good qualifying, first of all, got into Q3, which was brilliant. I was so, so glad to see it. Daniel Ricciardo was not as lucky, did not get out of Q2, but still, not bad, right? Race was not great. We had spins from Daniel. I don't think he had a great pit stop either. Yuki Tsunoda was having a better race, but kind of fell down the pecking order towards the end of the race, sadly. I just think, like Williams, I would have expected them to have one or two points on the board at this point. I know we're only two races in, but still. And for Williams, okay, I was basing it more off their performance last year. But with RB, I was basing this off of their performance in testing. I think there has just been bad luck for them, especially in Saudi. But yeah, I feel like there was a lot of promise in testing and whether they just had shown more than other teams maybe. But would have thought one or two points on the board maybe, did think that they would be fighting further up. But their drivers, yeah, did not have a great race out in Saudi. Tsunoda finishing in P14, Ricciardo finishing in P16, and that is what has just dropped them down the constructors' rankings a little bit more. And then in P10, too, no surprise for me, it once again Alpine. Retirement on the first lap is very on brand for Alpine right now. It's not good, guys. It's not great that we are two races into season and Alpine are in P10, a team that finished in P6 in the constructors last year, or P5. It was P6 that they finished in. Just had to think through all the teams for a second then. But to now be in P10 with 0 points is embarrassing. Traditionally, when we look at the bottom of the table, right, we tend to have teams that do not have much money, even in the cost cap era, right? There are teams that still can't reach the cost cap, and those are the teams that you expect to be at the bottom of the table. Alpine is a team that do have money compared to some of these smaller teams. They have their own engine supplier in Renault. They don't supply to anyone else, and they have drivers that are good. They are talented drivers. Both drivers are race winners, and yet we are in a place where the car is just awful. I do not blame the drivers at all for the performances over the past two races. I fully blame the car. Pierre could not have done anything about retiring during the first lap. And I think for Esteban, and had Pierre carried on, right, he's just fighting the car the best he can to give him a result. After Bahrain, the drivers were very positive and just saying, you know what, it's the first race, we have issues, we'll work on them, we'll figure it out. None of the drivers have actually done their interviews yet. When I started recording, literally the race finished, I came up to record. I would expect Pierre to probably be a little bit frustrated at the DNF, because I think any driver would be, especially a first lap DNF. And I think Esteban Ocon will also be disappointed that he ended in, what was it? Let's have a look. P13. So it was a better score and a better place compared to last week. However, if we carry on the season and these results keep happening, Alpine continue to be right at the bottom of the table, DNFs keep happening on the first lap, or just DNFs down to reliability, it doesn't have to be on the first lap, right? If they keep happening, if the drivers are fighting to get out of Q1, if they're fighting to try and just get into the points for a sole point, I can't see the drivers continuing to be that positive. And in all honesty, once again, they are two drivers that have their contracts running out at the end of this year. I definitely think they're going to be looking for a different seat. I already think they probably are going to be starting to look, because whatever is going on in Alpine, right, because they have lost their aero chief and their technical director, they're gone, they've resigned. Alpine are going through an internal reshuffle, but how many times are you going to keep reshuffling people internally? If people keep resigning and you keep firing people or wherever, there's going to be no one left to internally reshuffle. I do think you need some fresh blood into that engineering team, into Alpine as a whole, if I'm honest. I think whatever is going on there is not being helped by keeping everything so internal. Sometimes you need someone coming in with a fresh perspective, fresh eyes to look at the place, wonder what the heck is going on, and then tell you, you know what? These procedures and things that you have in place might not be working. These ideas you have for the car might not be the best. Just try and listen to me for 5 minutes and we can figure out if this is really the best way forward, or maybe, just maybe, there's a better way of doing this that would mean that you guys come away with points and without a DNF. But if they carry on going down the route they are currently on, then I could see them losing their drivers. I don't know, guys. I don't know whether I particularly enjoyed this race. I think there were more points in this race that I enjoyed. The battling between Oscar Piastri and Lewis Hamilton was very entertaining. The battle for P12, even though it wasn't for a point, was at least interesting to watch. Overall, though, I mean, you look at the points paying positions and there wasn't a lot of fighting going on. I mean, look, yes, I loved the fight between Lewis and Oscar, but we already knew that Lewis was going to end up having to pit at some point in the race anyway, so he was never going to be able to fully keep that place. It was more holding back Oscar from being able to fight with Charles if he was able to catch up with him. And I'm not convinced that he would have. So I would say, yes, a better race than Bahrain. Like, Bahrain was probably 3 to 4 out of 10. On my list, and if I had to score Saudi, I would say a 5 out of 10. We saw a bit more going on battle wise, but it wasn't exceptional. It wasn't one of the most exciting races that we've watched. What I will say is, though, I am very impressed that we only had one safety car in this circuit, and I don't know whether that's a product of the drivers getting used to the circuit a lot more. It's the fourth year we've had this GP now, or whether it's a product of the fact that we're not getting a lot of close racing up and down the field, so drivers don't have to take as many risks to stay on track and to stay ahead of their competitors. But I am glad it was just a safe race, because like I said, Saudi Arabian Grand Prix does put me on edge a little bit. Driver of the day went to Ollie Bearman. And I have to agree. Honestly, I think he just had an absolutely wicked race. It was so good to watch. So glad that he got in the points. And yes, likelihood is when we head out to Australia in 2 weeks' time, hopefully Carlos Sainz will be feeling better and back in the car. I don't want him to push himself, but in likelihood, I would say it's like he will end up back in the car. Ollie Bearman will probably be back in F2 if that's the case, but I'm looking forward to seeing how his season goes. He did end up getting pole for the F2 feature race until he got pulled out of F2 to do F1. So going to be interested to see how he does for the rest of the F2 season. I genuinely am just already thinking he's in F1 next year, guys. There's no doubt in my mind at this point. I am going to be so surprised and very, very disappointed if he doesn't end up with an F1 seat in 25. But yes, there is no racing next week. We have a chilled out non-race week before we head out to Australia for the Australian Grand Prix. However, I will be back next Tuesday, 9 a.m. Thank you guys so much for watching, and diolch yn fawr. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and TikTok at stewards_office if you're looking for more Formula One content from me, and I will see you guys the next time you're summoned to the stewards office.